What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero, because World War III is a really bad idea. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show. It's Monday, February 14th, 2011. It's Valentine's Day. If you have not gotten your flowers or candy for your significant other, boy, are you in a lot of trouble right now. Better make a point of stopping on your way home from work here. It's all, you know, flowers and cards, and I got a lovely little card. Actually, I got two of them from my lady love here, so we're doing that little Valentine's thing here. Now, you know, I've noticed this little shape that we have for Valentine's Day, you know, with the two bumps on top and the one below, and everyone says it's a heart. I don't think so. I've seen real hearts. They don't look like that. To me, it looks like another part of woman's anatomy a little further down, but that's just me because I'm a dirty old man here. Obviously, as we head into the new week, we're still dealing with the aftermath of the events in Egypt. One school of thought is, oh, huzzah, huzzah, the dictator is gone. Everything's going to be much better. The people in Egypt themselves are saying, well, maybe not quite. We're still not sure who's in charge. There's obviously faction fights going on. And worse, American and Israeli lackeys who are still inside the remnants of the former regime are still trying to do what they do for their masters, which is hijack the revolution and turn it back into serving the purposes of the United States and Israel. And they're meeting quite a bit of resistance, as you probably know, when Suleiman came out and basically announced that Mubarak had stepped down. And I commented at the time, it doesn't look like the face of a man who just got the top job. It looks like the face of a man who just got told, we're going to keep you in that front office as a figurehead, but you don't really have any authority, we're in charge. And then over the weekend, Egypt's prime minister came out and basically said, we're going to be continuing with a lot of Mubarak's policies and everything. And the military high command came out and said, no, we are not, and dissolved the Egyptian parliament. The cabinet has now all stepped down. So the military are now in charge. They're calling all the shots, and they're saying basically they are aiming for elections in September. They do not want to wait until next year. So we're going to see what's going on there. Now, I know the conventional wisdom is, ooh, military dictatorship bad, because after all, you know, we've got a government in the United States that's completely subordinate to the military. That's why more than half your tax money goes to buy bombs and bullets and things like that. But there is one advantage when you talk about screaming, you know, theocratic dictatorships. Generally, military regimes are anathema to that. You don't get a military dictatorship that starts believing in religious rule. The military tend to be nuts and bolts guys. Here in this country, in the United States of America, pretty much all of the rank and file military I know are pretty much strict constitutionalists. And like me, they're paleocons. Now, I'm not saying a military dictatorship is a good thing for the United States of America, but certainly we cannot go on with what we've got right now. Okay, Manny is in the control room today. We have a trainee operator today named Bill, who has no idea the swamp that he's have wandered into this morning in getting into our show. So when you call up at 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443, be gentle. This is Bill's first time. He's not used to you yet, so be nice and polite with him, and we'll get you on the air just as soon as we can. Now, interestingly enough, going out looking on the corporate media, well, let me use an immediate example. We have a single newspaper left here in Hawaii. It's called the Star Advertiser. It's this Frankenstein's monster that they stitched together out of the corpses of the Star Bulletin and the Honolulu Advertiser. And I was responding to online feedback regarding events in Egypt, and I went back and took a look at it today, this morning, and found out that the editors at the Star Advertiser are deleting all comments that are supportive of democracy in the Middle East, that are pointing out that it's not the Muslims that are causing all these wars. In short, anything that might blunt the new propaganda push that we're seeing from people like John Bolton are being deleted in the newspaper. So you got to keep an eye out for that stuff. They are still playing the old propaganda games. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more when we come back from these commercials. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Shocking, terrifying, but very truthful and revealing. Finally, a documentary on the horrifying results of unopposed estrogen. Estrogen dominance. Are we writing our own epitaph?
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about the aftermath of the revolution in Egypt and the obvious ongoing revolutions in all sorts of other countries right now. And basically, we're going to see all of the nations of the world respond to the successful revolution in Egypt in one of two ways. They are either going to back off and say, okay, we have to make changes, or we're going to lose our jobs. And we're seeing that already in some places like Jordan and Morocco. Or they're going to go completely the other direction and say, we'll show those slaves who's the boss here. And they get out the whips and the chains and the locks. And we're seeing that happen over there in Tunisia, which has, like Egypt tried to do, Algeria is shutting down their internet access, which is not going to work in a country where people get together anyway five times a day to pray together. But Algeria doesn't have any other better ideas to do, and that's what they're going to do. What we're seeing here in the United States of America is, unfortunately, sadly, they're going the second direction. They're out there to prove that they're still in charge of the world, that they can influence other countries, that they have a right to go in and just impose puppet dictators anywhere that they want to go. Now, what's really embarrassing, you probably remember a couple of weeks ago, how Barack Obama had chastised the American intelligence agencies for failing to predict the Egypt revolution. And now we're finding out basically the Central Intelligence Agency, the sweetest smelling spies in the world, apparently have been trying to predict social trends with these very large computer modeling systems, probably the same ones they were using to predict global warming. And apparently these computer models did not give any indication that the people of Egypt were about to revolt. The good news is they're probably using the exact same software system on the American people, which means they're going to have no idea when it happens here in the United States of America. So they're out there and saying, gosh darn this VISTA, and screaming and yelling about all the money they've wasted on that situation. Now, we're seeing John Bolton, Israel puppet, former U.S. Ambassador John Bolton, basically was making a speech at the Conservative Political Action Conference, and he's basically taking the line that democracy is really good in theory for the United States of America. Actually, it's pretty good in theory, not even for the United States of America, but it's a bad idea for any of the countries who might dare to vote in directions we don't approve of. Remember, we already went through this exercise in Palestine, where they had democratic elections, Hamas won, and the United States and Israel said, well, we're going to pretend that this never happened, and the Palestinian Authority is the government we recognize to be in charge over Palestine. But remember, when the Palestinians get upset at us, they only hate us for our freedoms. So John Bolton is out there openly advocating that while we may give lip service to the principles of democracy here in the United States of America, not counting the massive vote fraud that goes on every single election, that we should take the position that democracy in countries that might want to vote to go a different direction, we really can't tolerate that. And it's not a new idea. It's not a new idea. Because Henry Kissinger said much the same thing, about Chile when they were overthrowing the elected government of Allende and putting Pinochet in. Kissinger said, it's just too important to leave to the Chilean voters, which is an incredible amount of arrogance, but seems to be the case here. So Bolton is out there basically redefining the meaning of dickhead. And again, Bolton's whole idea is, gosh darn, if these countries go democratic, they might vote in an Islamic government, and that would just be a horrendous threat to world peace. Which brings me back to a point I made last week. I posted an article at whatreallyhappened.com. It has been picked up and gone viral around the world. It is one of the things that I posted to the Star advertiser that they decided they were going to delete. And it is simply this. In 1979, Iran, when they threw out the U.S. puppet ruler, the Shah of Iran, and by the way, the U.S. is getting ready to try and undo that whole thing all over again. When they threw out the Shah and they put in an Islamic Republic government in 1979, from that day to this, since 1979, those gosh darn dangerous threat to world peace Muslims in Iran have not invaded any other country. Period. End of discussion. In that same interval of time, Israel has attacked Lebanon, Iraq, Syria, Palestine, West Bank, Gaza, humanitarian aid flotillas, assassinations like the one in Dubai. In that same interval of time, 1979 to the present, the United States has invaded Libya, Panama, Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen, Sierra Leone. I mean, the list is huge. It is a huge, huge list. And we need to, you need to put that out there anywhere you see this nonsense about how Muslims are a threat to world peace and an Islamic State is a danger to world peace. They aren't. They aren't. The Islamic States are not the ones doing the constant attacking and invading. And every time you put it out there, I'll tell you right now, the megaphonies will get on, they'll come back, well, maybe they're not actually attacking people, but they're paying for the terrorists. And this one we got to put a cold water on right now. Somebody has started a viral rumor all over the internet that Iran banned Valentine's Day. There is absolutely no source for this claim. It's just more of the propaganda. And the reason I pointed out, the United States, as you know, last year the United States attempted to stage a coup d'etat in Iran. Now, how do you tell the difference between a genuine revolution and a coup d'etat is really very simple. A genuine revolution, you've got the majority of the people saying, get out, and the government gets out. In a coup d'etat, you find a small group of people willing to take a huge amount of money, and you stir them up and you say, act like there's protests and we'll try and overthrow the government from this end. It's exactly what the United States, the CIA, did in Iran back in 1953 when they toppled the democratically elected government of Mohammad Mossadegh and imposed the Shah of Iran, which brought with it the Savak, the secret police, and the torturing and the detentions and all those other really bad things. Same thing they did in Chile. Overthrew the democratically elected government of Allende, put in Pinochet the dictator. Same thing in Cuba with Batista, same thing in the Philippines with Ferdinand Marcos, and on and on and on. It is America's standard operating procedure. Now, it's already come out that the United States government, the State Department, is trying to pretend it's the Egyptian people, and they're flooding Twitter accounts in Iran with fake, bogus messages about overthrow Ahmadinejad. He's terrible. He dresses funny. He smells bad. He passes gas in airlocks. He tears the tags off his seat cushions. And all the same old propaganda that's going on. And they're trying to basically kick up the coup that failed last year and say, oh, see, it's just another one of those Mideast revolutions. Which means the U.S. government has not learned any lessons from what happened in Egypt. They're back to playing the same old games that have resulted in the vast majority of the world hating anything to do with the United States of America. You didn't see the U.S. State Department sending in Twitter messages in support of the Egyptian revolution. They didn't want that to happen. But they want to overthrow Ahmadinejad. Why? Because Israel wants him overthrown. Because Israel and the United States want a U.S.-controlled puppet in Iran, and Ahmadinejad won't play ball with them. That's the simple game. We're going to put dictators in charge of countries that are friendly to the United States and to Israel. They'll do what we say and all will be well until the people catch on to it, which is what happened in Palestine and Egypt and Tunisia and Algeria and Yemen and a whole bunch of these other places right now. So we're seeing riots now. It's close to home is Puerto Rico. Remember I said this is going to go around the world and it's going to wind up here in the United States of America. It's already in Puerto Rico. Huge, huge, huge riots against the police trying to put down protests at the University of Puerto Rico. The Mufti is warning of revolution in Saudi Arabia. They've been very friendly to U.S. interests, and they have been very polite toward Israel for all these years. And their people are standing up and saying, enough of this stuff. Enough of selling out our wealth to make people in the United States and Israel rich. Enough, enough, enough. Meanwhile, Tunisia is putting troops in the streets. And meanwhile, over in Pakistan, things are getting kind of dicey over there. As you know, there is a U.S. government contractor. He actually works for Blackwater XE, whatever they're calling themselves right now, you know, the new unholy crusade. And he shot dead a couple of guys who were chasing him who may have been Pakistan ISI. And Pakistan wants to put him on trial for murder. The U.S. is saying he's got diplomatic immunity. That thing is just cranking up and becoming a major point of contention. We might lose our influence over Pakistan. Good for the Pakistani people, I would say that. Meanwhile, I don't know if you're aware of this, there's been this long-running case involving a young woman named, and I hope I pronounced this correctly, and if I don't, please call and let me know what I did wrong. Aifia Siddiqui, or Siddiqui. And she is a very young lady. She is she's an MIT alumni. She went to Massachusetts Institute of Technology, same place my father graduated from, and was involved, you know, in child development services. That was her major. And she got grabbed in Pakistan and vanished with her children and was simply, you know, gone. Nobody knew where she was. And then she showed up a couple of years ago in serious health problems, severely injured. And now basically what's going on is during that entire time that she was gone, it has now come out the U.S. government and the Pakistani officials knew exactly where she was and how she was being tortured and what was being done to her. And as it turned out, like so many of the other people who are victims of the U.S. torture regime, she hadn't done anything. She was simply in the wrong place at the wrong time. She got grabbed and shopped, you know, for somebody trying to meet quota. You know, you must bring me 5 terrorists a week. Okay, I've only got 4. Let's grab this lady and take her over there. It's blowing up in their faces. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after these commercials.
Broadcasting Network.
What really happened with your host, Mike Rivero? You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about the aftermath of what's happened in Egypt and the growing trend of more and more of these revolutions around the world. And what's rather amazing is, of course, the United States government is continuing a policy of putting all of its foreign policy attention on Israel. Our Joint Chief of Staff Chairman, Admiral Mike Mullen, is in Israel reassuring them that no matter how angry they've made their neighbors from 60 years of constant invasions, assassinations, bombings, subversions, that the United States stands ready to protect Israel from the consequences of their crimes. No matter how many millions of American tax dollars it will take, no matter how many thousands of American children in uniform have to die for it, the United States government is committed to protecting Israel. I sure wish they were that committed to taking care of this country. And it is very clear they are not. And again, going back to last May, when Israel attacked the aid flotilla in international waters, that included an attack on a U.S.-flagged ship. A ship legally is considered the sovereign territory of the nation whose flag it flies. So a U.S.-flagged ship represents American sovereign territory, and Israel attacked and invaded it, in the process of which they captured, kidnapped, if you will, several American citizens, and they murdered one of them in cold blood. Oh my gosh, he's got a camera. Shoot him in the head. And what did the United States government do? Nothing. They went up to the United Nations and said, please don't be hard on Israel. They really had a really, really good reason for killing Americans. That'd be kind of like Franklin Roosevelt running up to the Congress after the attack on Pearl Harbor and saying, please, please, please don't do anything bad to the Japanese. They had a really good reason for attacking us at Pearl Harbor. They thought we were going to get in the way of their occupation of a foreign country. And so we come to a point where the obeisance by the U.S. government to Israel has reached a ridiculous point. And, of course, that was a major reason for the uprising in Egypt. They got sick of Mubarak always kowtowing to Tel Aviv and to the United States. And so Mike Mullen is over there in Israel. The top military commander for the entire U.S. military forces is over in Tel Aviv, davening and bowing and scraping and saying, yes, we will make sure it doesn't matter how many Palestinians you kill, how many aid workers you run a bulldozer over, how many ships you attack, and how many American kids from New York you shoot in the head. We will spend however much American tax money and American blood it takes to protect Israel from all these other countries that Israel has been attacking for the last 60 years. And it's absurd, and yet that is clearly continues to be the focus of the United States government. It's always about Israel. It's always about Israel. And you know something? It's not going to last. It cannot last much longer, because when the entire world gets fed up with the United States, when the entire world gets fed up with Israel, it's going to all be over. Egypt proved that. We're at those final faces. Now, we're getting a little bit of face save, because the White House knows that we know that Mike Mullen is over in Israel promising to spend all kinds of our tax money and all kinds of our children's lives to protect Israel. So Thomas Friedman's coming out there and saying the White House is disgusted with Israel. Well, that's not saying. I think we're all pretty much disgusted with Israel at this point. I don't know why he's saying it other than to try and rebuild that illusion that there's some kind of an adversarial relationship between Washington, D.C. and Tel Aviv, when there really isn't. Whatever Tel Aviv wants, Washington, D.C. will give one way or the other. It's been that way ever since 9/11, and I believe it's that way because the government of Israel is blackmailing the government of the United States over 9/11. Tel Aviv tells Washington, D.C., look, we'll blow the whole whistle. And yeah, it'll make us look bad, but it's going to make you look worse. So I don't believe this thing about White House disgusted with Israel or adversarial relationship, because the only time to pay attention to this is when President Obama stops signing those checks full of your tax dollars to go to Israel. And they never do that. And as long as they're not willing to stop sending your money to Israel to sustain their very high standard of living, not to mention all their killing machines, then any posturing that there's some kind of an upset or some kind of willingness of Washington, D.C. to break free of Israel, it's meaningless. It's propaganda. It's there to conceal the fact that once again, the U.S. government is getting ready to send your children to die in wars on Israel's enemies. Now, earlier in the show, I was mentioning about how countries watching the aftermath of Egypt are going to react one of two ways. They're either going to back off and say, we've pushed our people too hard, we got to back off, we got to let them have more of the blessings of life, you know, we just got to even things out a little bit more, because after all, inequality inevitably leads to a crash. It is unavoidable. There is no way to have all the money in a few pockets and not have society start to crumble around you, for no other reason than logistical realities of not having the money available at all levels in society. It has nothing to do with politics or hate or anger or revolutionary fever. If the money is all drawn into a single point within the society, then the rest of the society simply grinds to a halt. It's like having all the blood pool up in your brain, and your brain might be having a really good time, but the body is going to die. And that's what happens when all the money piles up over Wall Street in Washington, D.C. The rest of the nation starts to die. Unavoidable. All right, we're going to take a break. Join us on the air, 800-313-9443, and we will be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
We will not go down You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking about how various governments around the world, and in particular the United States government, are responding to the Egyptian revolution. They're trying to dismiss it as, oh, it's an Arab revolt. No, it isn't. It began in Iceland. It's a revolt against the global bankers. It's a revolt against global fascism. It started in Iceland. It swept Europe. Now it's sweeping Africa and the Middle East. It's in Puerto Rico. It is going to sweep the entire world. And governments are either going to back off and say, okay, we can't do this anymore. We have impoverished the people enough. We've repressed them enough. It's only making them stronger. It's ticking them off, and we got to back off. Or they're going to go the other way, which is to say, we're going to show those slaves who's the boss here. And it looks like the United States government is sadly going that second route. We're hearing the story of the Department of Homeland Security, the people who love to grope and fondle you at the airport and have yet to actually find a single real terrorist with all of this nonsense. They've declared homegrown terrorists are fueled by the Internet. So what they're basically saying is we're all considered terrorists now if we don't love the government. Terrorists used to be Osama bin Laden, who's been dead for a long time, and now they're changing the definition of the word. And this is how the government takes your freedoms away from you. They start it and they say, oh, you know, we can't give constitutional rights to terrorists. They're terrorists. We can't do that. And people say, well, I guess the Bill of Rights shouldn't apply to terrorists because they're terrorists. And then over time, the government starts applying the word terrorist to people who really aren't very terrorizing at all. Most of us, we're just irritating. But DHS, we're all we're homegrown terrorists. Anybody who questions the legitimacy of the government is now considered a terrorist. These fusion centers that they've set up all over the place. Okay, I mean, they're in order to meet their quotas of terrorist suspects, they're nailing people, you know, who are like vegetarians, who are in trouble now because the winter is basically, ending produce from Mexico. People who stand up for the environment, and I'm not talking the global warming cultists, I'm talking about real environmentalists are being, you know, viewed as homegrown terrorists. And now the Department of Homeland Security is saying all those things that you said were cool to use on those gosh darn Arab Muslims, they're now going to start using against ordinary American citizens who are simply exercising their right under the First Amendment to stand up and tell the government when it's doing something that people don't agree with. If we are a democracy, we have a right to tell the government they're messing up. If we are a free people, we have the freedom to say no when the government asks us to do something or support something we know to be immoral or illegal or unethical. And because the social media and the internet have proven to be such a powerful force for change and such a huge threat to the established oligarchs, they're trying to figure out some way they can convince the people that it needs to be shut down. And it won't. And again, the historical parallel goes right back to Gutenberg and movable type printing. When books became affordable to ordinary working middle class people, and information, the very nature of information flow in society changed. Before Gutenberg, books were very expensive. Only the very rich could have any of those. And so the very rich controlled what books were written and what was in them. When Gutenberg invented movable type printing and everybody could get books, the rich lost control of what books were being published. They lost control of what was in the books. And they tried to fight back in ways such as we are seeing here. Virtually every revolution has been accompanied by the tyranny attempting to smash printing presses owned by the revolution. Whether it's Ben Franklin's printing presses or Jean-Paul Marat's printing presses, the attack was on the information flow among the people to try and restore control over knowledge and information to the ruling classes. And it failed then, it's going to fail now. All it does is underscore the degree to which the ruling class is terrified that they're not able to successfully lie to the population. They're not able to propagandize us into saying, oh, into believing the Muslims are bad. The Muslims are a danger to peace. We cannot allow an Islamic State because that will lead to war. Because out here on the internet, on the blogs, on the alternative media, we know the truth. Since 1979, when Iran became an Islamic State, they haven't invaded anybody. Israel has invaded other countries. The United States invades huge amounts of other countries, but not Iran. Who is the threat to world peace? Go back and study the history of the Third Reich. Those German soldiers who roared into Poland did so not because they hated the Poles or they wanted to conquer those lands for the German, you know, the thousand-year Reich. They were convinced that the Polish people were the bad guys, that the Polish people were terrorists, that the Polish people were going to come and kill them if Germany did not kill Poland first. That's how World War II got launched. Israel and the United States are doing exactly the same thing. They're trying to convince you through propaganda that the countries being invaded by Israel and the United States are the bad guys. They deserve it. They had it coming. And they didn't. You've got to study history real hard, because right now in the United States, we're on the wrong side of it. We're the bad guys. I know you don't want to hear it. I get hate mail all the time saying, you can't say that about America. We're the good guys. We stand for this and we stand for that. And those Muslims, they're evil people, and they worship the moon and they banned Valentine's Day. And they hate the Jews and all the rest of that. And they murder people inside their country who don't believe as they do. And I went a couple of rounds on that issue with one of the megaphonies who was trying to post this "Let's Go Stomp the Muslims" propaganda to the Star Advertiser. And I posted links to all these articles about how Israel offered Jews living in Iran thousands and thousands of dollars to emigrate. And the Jews in Iran said, no, we're really quite comfortable here. In fact, the largest group of Jews outside of Israel itself in the Middle East live in Iran, and they're happy there. But that doesn't support the propaganda for a war. So we get all these lies that are being told constantly, but it doesn't work anymore because we have alternative means of information. And that's why the DHS is out there saying homegrown terrorists fueled by the internet. No, they aren't. The internet denies the government the ability to lie to the people with impunity. And without that ability to lie to you, they can't trick you into wars against people who really don't deserve to be attacked. And they're waving terrorists all over the place again. Now they're trying to convince everybody that, you know, somebody has smuggled a dirty bomb into the United States through one of our ocean ports, and DHS is saying, oh, great, we get to fondle sailors now. And it's all hoax, and it's all scaring, and it's, you know, the Al-Qaeda terrorists are all phonies. It's a show. It's theater. It's designed to trick you into going along with a policy of war and conquest for greed. That's exactly what it is. We have a bunch of hallucinated fanatics who are out there saying, God wants us to have all the land from somewhere over here to somewhere over there. And if you don't go along with us, it means you're going to go to the dark regions. And it's a lot of nonsense. Left to themselves, Christians, Jews, and Muslims get along quite well. They really do. Most people, 98% of the human population, really are very good people. And they get along together, and they're altruistic, and they look out for each other. It's that 2% of the sociopathic money addicts who want to stand on top of a pyramid built to their own glory and be remembered forever that lead us into these wars and destruction and all of this folly, and they're trying to do it all over again. Over in Los Angeles, Los Angeles City Attorney Carmen Trutanic is now trying to get laws passed where political protesters can be thrown in jail and kept there. So much for the First Amendment. The boot is coming down on America right now because they are afraid of you. They completely missed what was happening in Egypt. And if they're using that same botched up CIA computer on the American population, then right now they're thinking, we don't know how close the American people are to a revolution. We have no idea. Could happen next week. Yeah, it could. It only took 18 days for the people of Egypt to bring down Mubarak. It took only 14 days for the people of Romania to put Ceausescu in front of a machine gun. In the modern information age, it can happen that fast. Revolution is now becoming a very rapid process. And it all comes down to, you know, economics. When the trade unions joined the protesters in Egypt and the money stopped flowing, that's when Mubarak was finished. The House of Representatives are still trying to wrangle through an extension to the USA Patriot Act, which gives the government the supposed legal right to completely ignore the Fourth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment, to basically read your emails without warrants, to listen to your phone calls without warrants, to basically snoop on anybody anywhere at any time. Now, they can't actually do it. They can't actually do it. They don't have the technology. They don't have the manpower to watch every single American every hour of every single day. It's a scare tactic. They want you to think that they are reading your emails and listening to your phone calls and peeking through your windows with drones all the time. And they're probably listening to a few phone calls, and they're probably listening to, you know, they're raiding a few computers, and, you know, they're listening to a few phone calls and reading some email, and they've got the drones up there basically looking at roofs. That's what the drones see. They see tiles and shingles and chimneys. That's what they see. But they're there to convince you that the government is watching you at all times, like those TV cameras on the street corners. Hitler tried the same trick with the German people. They had the neighborhood informants. Be careful what you say, Fräulein. The informants will hear you. Yeah. It's the same trick all over again. But the reality is Hitler didn't have enough informants to have one on every block. And the U.S. government doesn't have enough informants to have one absolutely everywhere. They concentrate on the media, and they concentrate on educational institutions and the top management on major corporations, but they can't watch all 300 million Americans 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They just don't have the manpower. They don't have the computer power to do it. They just want you to think that they do, because it's a way of scaring you into not talking to each other, into not using your computers to organize the way the Egyptians did. It's all about keeping you under control through fear. And remember what happened in Egypt. And the people were all saying the same thing over and over again. We lost our fear. And when they lost their fear is when Mubarak came down. And the reason for that is really very simple. We've mentioned it before. Fear is tiring. Fear is exhausting. It just sucks it right out of you. And there comes a point when the government keeps you in a state of fear for long enough, and it's been 10 years now. The U.S. government, the U.S. government and the corporate TV networks, they are the real terrorists. They are the ones constantly trying to keep you in a state of terror. And they've been doing it for 10 years. And we're tired. We're burned out. The neurotransmitters your brain requires to feel fear are exhausted. They're gone. They're simply wiped out. And you reach that point where all of a sudden you just saw, I'm not feeling afraid anymore. And it's not a question about being brave. I just can't. It's just not there anymore. And all that's left is anger and rage and disgust, and that's when things blow up. And that, I think, is a big part where the U.S. government has really failed. They didn't understand there's only so long you can keep a population afraid, and then they just can't feel fear any longer. And that's when it comes apart. We've been in this state of emergency and this government media-induced fear for 10 years now. We're tired of it. We're burned out on it. We can't feel afraid anymore. It's beyond our choice. It doesn't happen. Then you booga booga. Oh, okay, big deal. I don't care anymore. It just doesn't work anymore. George Soros is out there warning that the U.S. is on the verge of a dictatorial democracy, which means there's a dictatorship masked in the trappings of democracy. I don't know where George has been. We're already there. He needs to go back and look at that HBO documentary, Hacking Democracy. started passing my disc of that around to people, and they come back holding this disc saying, we had no idea it was that bad in this country. We see it in the news, all these other countries with phony elections and stuff. We didn't think it could happen here. Oh, really? Why? Did you think we were immune from corruption and vote fraud just because we're Americans? That's kind of a racist attitude, isn't it? Our government is no better and no worse than the other governments we've seen around the world. And that means our government's no better or worse than Stalin, Lenin, Hitler, Mubarak, Musharraf, who I guess is now facing an arrest warrant over the assassination of Bhutto. Political power attracts the very people who shouldn't have it. And in the United States of America, we have people who are willing to do anything to achieve political power. It therefore follows, once they have it, they're going to be equally willing to do anything with it. And unfortunately, history has taught us that the teller of white lies is going to win over the honest man. The teller of black lies will win out over the teller of white lies. The thief will win out over the liar. The murderer will win out over the thief. The drug lord will win out over the murderer. The genocidal tyrant will beat all of them. Over time, governments tend toward corruption and tyranny and oligarchy. It is inescapable historic reality. So the question in these times is not, what is the U.S. government capable of? The real question is, in these troubled times, what is the U.S. government not capable of? Where would they draw the line to not continue to rule America and to loot it for their own purposes, to spend the money on $100,000 wristwatches, to spend the money on Israel, to spend the money on war, to go on taking more than half of everything you ever earn in your life to basically put in the pockets of the bankers? What would they not do to perpetuate that reign? Fake a terrorist attack? They've already done that. Engage in torture? They're doing that now. Lie? They've done that. Cheat? Yep. Steal? Yep. Murder? Yep. They've done it all. You tell me, what would this government not do? Where would they draw the line and say, I can't do that, it's really immoral? I dare you to find that line. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our first hour. We're about ready to lose our audience at WWCR Shortwave Radio. A reminder that you can tune into the second hour of our broadcast by going to republicbroadcasting.org. That's republicbroadcasting.org, and pick up on the rest of what we're going to be talking about. Phone lines are still open, 800-313-9443, 800-313-9443. Now, along with this audio tape that has surfaced in the Siddiqui case that basically makes it obvious, this MIT graduate, this woman and her kids were shopped to Pakistan's ISI with the full knowledge of the American government. She was apparently tortured, her children traumatized, finally released, everybody denying all responsibility, and now this tape has surfaced. It is absolutely going to scandalize the situation. Plus, on top of that, we have this situation with the U.S. diplomat who gunned a couple of people down, and it looks like Pakistan is getting ready to say, we're fed up with all this U.S. intrigue as well. Now, hard on the heels of that, very interesting story. Remember the London tube bombing, the one that took place right exactly at the same time and place as a training exercise? And remember how reports were coming out that in the weeks before this training exercise, somebody had gone into the Muslim neighborhoods in London recruiting actors who were going to be paid money for pretending to be terrorists for the purpose of the security drill. And they arrested and they tried and convicted one person who was supposed to have been the guy who gave the so-called terrorists the bombs. Okay, and he was sentenced to 70 years in prison. Okay, he's now been released after only 4.5 years. Reviving speculation that he was a U.S. informant, an undercover informant who set up the patsies to take the fall for another false flag terrorist attack. Now he's going to take his 4.5 years in prison as his bona fides, and they're probably going to send him back to the Middle East and say, see, I was a real terrorist here. Let me give you this package of cookies to deliver over to the police station and things like that. It's all a fraud. It's all staged. It's like the burning of the Reichstag. We're going to set fire to the building and then we'll blame our bad guys so that we can go over and we can attack them. Nothing new with that. Nothing new with that at all. All right, we're going to switch over here to another subject near and dear to our hearts. I was joking before, earlier, about, you know, all the vegetarians, you know, with this holier-than-thou attitude. I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat meat. Okay, good. Now you can starve, because the worst freeze in 60 years has wiped out entire crops all across the southwestern United States and northern Mexico. We don't think of Mexico as being a kind of place where they have a lot of problems with cold weather. And this freeze that we all just went through, it's the worst in 60 years, and it's just devastated the produce crops. So produce, fresh produce in the markets is going to become very, very dear in the near future. If I were you, I'd start buying some canned corn and canned goodies and just put them in the pantry there. And it is a reminder that farmers are able to protect their crops from a freeze if they know in advance to make the preparations. And the farmers did not, because the carbon Nazis, who are so desperate for a carbon tax to play with that they don't care who gets hurt in the process, kept saying, it's a warm winter, warm winter. Last October, UK's Met Office, it will be a mild winter. Don't worry about snow tires. It's just going to be wonderful. We've had the third hard winter in a row. We'll be right back after station identification. Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about the very hard winter that we're enduring. We're through the worst of the freeze. Now that we're in mid-February, hopefully things will lighten up a little bit, but the damage is done. Food crops all across the Northern Hemisphere have been absolutely devastated, and now the global warming hucksters are trying to figure out how can we hide this from the public so they don't realize how badly we lied to them. Which brings us to the story of the UK Met Office, United Kingdom Meteorological Office, which last October was predicting a mild winter. Now, there is actually a record of temperatures for Great Britain called the Central England Temperature Record. It is one of the longest continuous accurate temperature records in the world, going all the way back to 1659. December 2010 was the coldest December in 120 years. And the second coldest December temperature in the entire record of 352 years. So what did the Met Office do with this data? It used to be easily accessible on the website. Now it's been buried. You have to know exactly where to go to get it. If you try and hunt it down from the front page, you can't find it. They're Orwellizing it. And the reason they're doing that is very simple. A lot of money is invested in selling this scam of human-caused global warming so that they can get a carbon tax, a lot of money on the line, and they can buy and sell these carbon credits. They want to Enronize carbon dioxide and do to the entire planet with carbon dioxide what Enron did to California with electricity, and it's not pretty. California still has not recovered from the financial screwing they got from the scammers. And these scammers are trying to find a way to come back and make everybody forget about the really bad winter we've been through. We know that one of the Rothschild concerns has bought up the primary source of online weather information, which puts them in a position to manipulate and control public perception of weather going into this next summer. So what you need to do, because these carbon Nazis are not quitting, the push for a global government partly rests on a global environmental authority with the power to come in and tell you you've got to use less electricity, you've got to use less water, you've got to use certain light bulbs, you've got to put certain kinds of fuel in your car because it's good for Mother Earth. And so they're trying to figure out some way they can bamboozle you into thinking that this human-caused global warming is still a problem, despite three crushing hard winters and an actual global temperature decline since 1995. So what you need to do is get out your little camera and take as many pictures of this winter as you can, and you just put them away. And as we head into summer, when the carbon Nazis come out, when Al Gore comes out of hibernation and stands up and he says, I'm being super serious, we must be on guard against man bear pig, and they start screaming about global warming, you go back to those pictures that you took now, and you look at them and you say, yeah, we remember the global warming. Our attention span is longer than the 30 seconds the corporate media and the government give us credit for. We remember the last three hard winters. We remember the soaring high food prices we're all paying because the farmers were caught off guard. They were told it was going to be a mild winter, and they did not prepare to protect their crops from hard freezes, and they lost their crops. They're going to be going out of business. They're going to be losing their farms because they got suckered in by the carbon Nazis. All righty, let's see. We're going to take a break for some commercials. When we come back, we're going to go to the phones. We've got callers, Peter in Los Angeles, and we'll be right back.
Public Radio. Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to go right to the phones. We've got Peter in Los Angeles. Aloha, Peter. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. Listen, I just am responding to your rhetorical question. What will the U.S. government not do?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. And, you know, I want to remind you, because, you know, I know it's just a couple weeks ago, but how about the April Glaspie thing, which has already disappeared, where we basically snookered Saddam Hussein into invading Kuwait?
Yeah.
You know, and then I know a week we had to play a game like this, you know, Spanish-American War, World War One, World War Two, you know, geez, even Korea with Dean Acheson moving his defense perimeter in a bulletin that left out Korea, and then they invaded. And Vietnam, and now the Gulf War, and then the lies about the nuclear weapons, and then, you know, Operation Gladio and Operation Northwoods. And you know, I mean, my God, it goes on and on and on. And by the way...
Did you ever read Art of War by Sun Tzu?
Yes.
Okay, it's a fabulous book. If you have not read it, listeners, you need to get it. It is the manual that most warriors follow. And in there it says, all wars are based on deception. And what that means is when one ruler decides that he has got to initiate a war against another country for conquest or greed or because the invisible man in the clouds told him to, he's got to lie to his own people to get them to go along. There has never been a war that started with the truth. And that's just a reality.
Michael, and also, by the way, I don't know if you remember this or not, but the 7-7 bomber in Britain, the guy we were talking about earlier, that was another terrorist attack where the Israelis, yet another one, where they had forewarning.
Yes.
And just as they did with Odigo and 9-1-1, and, I mean, my God, I mean...
Isn't that amazing how the Israelis always seem to know these things are going to happen and get out of the way just before they go bang?
And never can do anything to stop it.
Yeah, well, no, what they do is they'll come and they say, we think something bad's going to happen, and when it happens, it's the Muslims who did it!
Yeah. When
you hear the bang, think Muslims! And that's, you know, and they'll do that. And then, you know, certainly in the case of 9-11, you know, they get their lackeys in the FBI to go around and shut down any websites that might say, look, we had nothing to do with it, in order to make it a done deal and a hard sell and everything. The good news is pretty much everybody in the world has caught on to how these things work and how the propagandists play their game. We know that there's a megaphone out there. We know that Israel's government is hiring people to prowl the internet and post things. In fact, I just had somebody basically hurl a lot of gratuitous abuse at me over that article about how since 1979, Iran has not invaded anybody but Israel and the U.S. has. There really is no rebuttal to that other than profanity and obscenity, and I'm certainly getting a fair share of that. But we all know that there are paid operatives out there. We know the corporate media is completely owned. We know that there are paid operatives out there on the alternative media and the blogosphere. We know that in addition to the blogs, there are now the flogs, the phony blogs that are manufactured creations of public relations firms. We know that there are opportunists who are out there. WikiLeaks is now trying to claim credit for the Tunisian and Egyptian revolutions, which is complete nonsense, but that's the way they're trying to play the game. And we understand now how that works. It's like a magician act, okay? If once you see the card up the sleeve or where the rabbit is hidden, it never works again. And that's, you know, it's kind of pathetic to see the magician to stand up there and keep on trying to do his show when we all know we've seen the wires and the mirrors and everything like that. Didn't mean to cut you off. Please continue.
No, it's a great question you asked, though. What won't they do? And in lieu of of probably 9-1-1 and definitely lying us into the wars and lying us into all these other wars in my lifetime and your lifetime, there's nothing that they won't do.
They look at the human population the way a ranch owner looks at a herd of cattle. I mean, certainly from Israel's point of view, that's what the word goyim means, cattle. And any rancher is going to tell you that, you know, they're perfectly willing to slaughter off 20% of the herd to make the other 80% a little bit more mellow and more obedient. And certainly, you know, we know by default that any nation willing to start a war is willing to basically kill large percentages of their own population for the sake of personal aggrandizement and greed and so forth. That's what happens when you start a war. You're saying to your own population, you know, some of you may die, but that's a sacrifice I am willing to make. It's one of the best lines out of the original Shrek.
We're here to be harvested, Michael.
Yeah, we're here to be harvested and fleeced and sucked on, and frankly, some of us are getting rather tired of it. I know that the tyrants like to look at us as a bunch of rabbits, but even rabbits have teeth, and sometimes rabbits will get lucky, to paraphrase from Tom Clancy.
All right. Thanks, Michael. I'm off here.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Also, one of our readers put up this clip from the movie A Bug's Life on YouTube, where it's the moment where the grasshoppers are realizing that if they don't crush down the revolt of the ants, they're in trouble. Because even though a grasshopper is much bigger than an ant, there are far more of the ants than there are of the grasshoppers. And, of course, it's a rather interesting revolutionary tale to see being reprised at this particular time in our history. All righty, let's see. Phone lines are open again. 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443. Speaking of the economy, quantitative easing is a total failure, at least with regards to the American people. Now, Bernanke himself has stated in the past that the purpose of quantitative easing, too, was to keep the stock market propped up so that all those people who've got their money in the stock market can sleep safe at night. Oops, excuse me. Sleep safe at night knowing that their investments in the stock market are safe and secure and they can't lose any money, because that is the essence of a fascist economic state. Profits are kept private, losses will get dumped on the people. That's what they're there for. That's what the cattle are there for, to pay for all the losses. That's what a fascist economic state is all about. So, meanwhile, of course, every time Bernanke cranks up that printing press, the money in your pocket loses value. This is not some far-off abstract thing where you can say, well, okay, Bernanke prints up the printing press and he gives it to Wall Street. Doesn't affect me. Yeah, it does. Because all the money that is in your pocket, all the money that you've already worked for, all the money that you've earned, everything that you've got in your savings account starts losing value. It's magic. I wave the magic printing press and the money in your pocket is only worth half of what it was yesterday. Now, we know that the hard freeze is one of the reasons why fresh produce prices are skyrocketing. But everything at the market, the price is going up, and so are the prices at the gas stations and the tire stores and the appliance stores. Walmart, the queen of the importing from the cheap places store, their prices have gone up because the dollar is losing value. We are in the hyperinflationary spiral, where the Federal Reserve just prints up enough money to keep all the rich people still happy and doesn't care how much it harms ordinary Americans. Now, hard on the heels of the FCIC report from a week ago, which basically admitted that fraud and criminality in the mortgage-backed securities scam is the reason we've been through 10 years of absolute economic devastation. And it didn't have to happen. If Wall Street had played by the rules, could have been avoided. If the U.S. government had held Wall Street to the rules, could have been avoided. It did not need to happen. You did not need to be losing all your homes. You did not need to have to, you know, take a lower paying job. You did not need to have to cancel your children's college education. You did not have to avoid, you know, put off necessary medical care. None of that needed to happen. But it did happen because Wall Street got greedy. They engaged in a monumental financial swindle, the biggest one since the Great South Seas Bubble of 1721. And the U.S. government turned a blind eye and let him do it because, after all, Wall Street makes big donations to campaign chests. And that's what buys you permission to go on out and do this kind of thing in America. So hard on the heel of the FCIC report confirming, and, you know, and of course we've got Alan Greenspan on videotape admitting this is all the result of fraud and criminality. So now we've got quotes from former Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, from his own memoir of the financial crisis called On the Brink, basically saying that they really had no plan. They just went along making it up as they went along. They didn't really have a plan. And the end result is they just made things worse. Now, that's being generous. Remember, he's trying to write his memoirs in a way that makes him look as positive as possible. He's saying, I'm an idiot, because you can't be jailed in this country for being an idiot. You can be jailed for being corrupt. And that may be the darker truth behind his statement. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Craig in Ontario. Aloha, Craig. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. Just calling from Friendly Pass of Canada up here.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. While all the things have been happening in Egypt, the Toronto Stock Exchange announces that it might merger with the London Stock Exchange,
mm-hmm.
Number one. Number two, I want to get your opinion on this, is that our Zionist puppet Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, he's been talking to, I guess, with Obama and your cabinet about reentering the pre-trade.
Craig, can you hold on that? We got to take a break for commercials. Don't go away. I want you to pick up at that spot when we come back from these words from our sponsors.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
What Really Happened with your host, Mike Rivero. Join Mike on the air. Call toll-free 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Craig in Ontario. And, Craig, before I let you pick up where you left off, I think it is very obvious that the globalists, the people who think one giant planet with them in charge is a really wonderful idea, are realizing they could lose it all. They're so close to selling all of the world on a need for a global financial authority and a global environmental authority and a global health authority, and all of a sudden the people of the world are standing up and saying, look, all this globalism is what's driving us into poverty and slavery, and we understand a global government that is brought into existence through fraud and deception has to be a dictatorship. It has to be history's greatest tyranny that cannot allow freedom of speech or freedom of thought or freedom of inquiry just to survive the manner in which it was brought into existence. And I think Egypt and Tunisia and Algeria have sent a message to the globalists. They're on the verge of losing that which they have worked for a half a century trying to bring into being. And I think their reaction is going to be they're accelerating their plans. They're trying to basically throw it all together, slapdash as fast as they can, and say, see, it's a global government. It's done. Quit your belly aching and go back to your slave pens. So with that in mind, go ahead, Craig, and pick up where you left off.
Okay, yeah. Basically, I mean, we see it economically here with the Canadian Toronto Stock Exchange wanting to merge or looking at merging with the London Stock Exchange, you know, the City of London. Boom, people, mm-hmm. open your eyes. I'm just reading here from globalresearch.ca. I guess on February 4th, Harper and Obama, they released something called Beyond the Border, a shared vision for perimeter security and economic competitiveness, and mm-hmm. it focused on four areas of cooperation, blah, blah, blah. But I'll have with this one. Integrated cross-border law enforcement and critical infrastructure and cybersecurity. And the reason I bring this up is because I think a long time, you know, a lot of Canadians, the general feeling up here, we've been very smug, right? Like, you know, we're so pacifist, we're good people, thank God we don't have guns, we're not like the States. Well, mm-hmm. you know what, folks, if we don't wake up, it's coming fast. And personally, as a Canadian, I now come to realize that I'm glad that you guys have your right to bear arms. I would never mm-hmm. have said that 5 years ago. Unbelievable how that's a 180 on that, once you see what's happening. But this whole integration with the border police, like, where do you see this going? Like, I know you have the 10 areas of fusion centers or 10 FEMA zones on the go, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would they try to integrate us with you guys with that?
Oh, probably. I mean, again, the ultimate goal is globalism. Everything is plugged into a central command center, imperial, you know, emperor, highnessness, whatever, grand poobah they're going to call him. The fusion centers are simply there to try and bring together all of these disparate computer systems in various police and investigation departments. It doesn't always work. You know, these fusion centers follow the GIGO law, garbage in, garbage out, and unfortunately the garbage coming out results in innocent people being prosecuted and thrown in jail or subject to torture under the terrorism attacks. Now, the big problem with this attempt to merge Canada and the United States together is that the idea would be that Canada's, when they talk about cross-border law enforcement, the goal there is to say, oh, well, because Canada bans guns, we now have to ban guns here in the United States of America, and because this is a treaty, and under the Constitution, treaties supersede all of the laws in the United States, well, sorry about the Second Amendment here, but, you know, we're going to have to ban guns and so forth and so on.
Just like the United Nations.
Basically the goal...
That's what they're trying to do, adopt all these United Nations laws, isn't it?
Yeah, they basically they are, because they cannot have a globalist government with an armed population. And you know what's really interesting, though, is that that kind of thinking, I'm almost willing to let them go on thinking that and wasting their time on it, because if there's another lesson to come out of Egypt, it's that guns were not a factor. Only 2% of the Egyptian population have firearms. That is, you know, very effectively a disarmed population, and they still beat the government. And they did it peacefully. There was no bloodbath.
And you feel like fairly confident this is not any kind of one of those George Soros color revolutions at all. You think this is like a good thing from Egypt, eh?
I think it could still be hijacked, and it still be can be warped and distorted into something negative. But my read on this was a genuine uprising of the Egyptian people, the way Romania was against Ceausescu. It is certainly not to be confused with a very obvious and heavy-handed attempt by the U.S. government to restart the failed coup from last year. And the way you tell the difference, as I said before, is in a real revolution, the vast majority of the people are saying, government, you are fired. And in a coup d'etat, you have a very tiny minority standing out there trying to look visible, trying to look like there's more of them than there really are, and they're always given a lot of money and a lot of support by foreign governments. And like I said, we've got a story now. The U.S. State Department is flooding Iranian Twitter accounts with all these bogus messages about arise, ye people, and smite the guy that Israel doesn't like.
Yeah.
And so that's the
new Farsi account, right?
I'm sorry?
That's that new Twitter Farsi account you're talking about, the U.S. government set up?
Well, I don't know which account they're using. I just know that the story came out today that the U.S. State Department trying to do a monkey see, monkey do with what happened in Egypt is trying to use the social networking in Iran. Now, they did try it again last year, and they flooded Twitter so much that people almost couldn't even read it to begin with. And it actually got to the point where people weren't even getting the U.S. propaganda anymore, which I think is another reason that the coup last year failed, along with the very obvious and stupid mistake of having the flag of the Shah of Iran as the flag of the revolutionaries. That did not go over well at all with anybody. We got to take a break. Thank you for the call, Craig, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. And going back to address that comment about what is our government not capable of, yesterday was the anniversary of the firebombing of Dresden, Germany. I know the war hawks are going to say, well, they deserved it. Those gosh darn Nazis and everything like that. Well, maybe, maybe not. Remember, the root cause of World War II was the global boycott organized against Germany's economy because Hitler refused to sell the German people into the slavery of a private central bank. Same thing that Andrew Jackson did, for which he was almost assassinated. Same thing Lincoln did before he was assassinated. Same thing John F. Kennedy tried to do before he was assassinated. Had it not been for that boycott, Germany would not have needed to resort to war in order to meet its logistical, economic, and raw material needs. So, that being said, one of the greatest crimes of World War II was the firebombing of Dresden, Germany, February 13th, 1945. More people died in the firebombing of Dresden than died in Hiroshima and Nagasaki combined. And the reason it's considered a crime is that Dresden, Germany was not a legitimate target of war. There were no munition factories there. There were no rail concentrations of rail lines. It wasn't a switching station. It was not logistically important. It was a cultural center. Orchestras and museums and art galleries and the China Company. Dresden, China was famous throughout the world. And the United States decided to bomb the place simply to prove that they had the political will to commit such atrocities, to try and demoralize the German people by destroying non-military targets of great cultural significance. Japan was already attempting to surrender when the atomic bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, tried to surrender again after Hiroshima. Harry Truman ordered the dropping of the second bomb not to defeat Japan, because he knew they were trying to surrender, but to prove to the Russians that we had the political will to go on using this most horrific of weapons. So we can go back and we can look in history and we can see very clear indications of the true mindset of the American government. Remember, Germany was not at war with the United States. Germany didn't even attack the United States. Roosevelt goaded Japan into the attack on Pearl Harbor, knew it was coming, hid that information from the Hawaii commanders in order to trick the United States into getting into World War II prior to Pearl Harbor. The American people did not want to go to war in Europe any more than we wanted to go to war in Iraq or Afghanistan or Yemen or anywhere else. Roosevelt tricked us into war. He goaded Japan with this eight-step plan that was put together by Office of Naval Intelligence Lieutenant Commander Arthur H. McCollum. And Roosevelt followed all eight of the steps, and after he followed the eighth one, Japan attacked. And Roosevelt knew they were coming. A week before the attack, radio communications to and from the striking fleet were being intercepted at a shortwave radio station operated by the U.S. government at what is now Haiya State Park over on the windward side, decoded at Station Hypo at Pearl Harbor and sent on to the White House, but never shared with Admiral Kimmel and General Short, who took the public blame for failing to be prepared for the sneak attack. They were set up to fail. Fortunately, Congress posthumously restored them to full rank years later when it became obvious that they had just been pawns in this great game of starting World War II. And I mention that only because we are seeing those entities in our society who profit from war and devastation, political power, banks that love war because everybody goes into debt. They don't even care which side wins. That's why Prescott Bush, Brown Brothers Harriman in New York were funding Hitler. They wanted a war. They wanted a war. They didn't even care which side was going to win because both sides would go into debt. And they want to do it again. The United States government has a long history of getting out of their financial problems with war. They got out of the crash of 1907 by getting into World War I. They got out of the crash in 1929 by getting into World War II. Here we are in the throes of the crash of 2007, and look how hard the government is trying to start wars with everybody out there. We're going to go out and we're just going to murder all the people we owe money to, and it doesn't matter how many Americans have to die in the process, it'll balance the books, and that's what's really important. And so we need to be very careful about this renewed effort to stage a coup in Iran or to demonize the Muslims and try and resell a war against those gosh darn Arabs who have the temerity to rebel against their U.S. puppet rulers. And again, from the hate mail I'm getting, I've hit a nerve. Simply by pointing out that in 1979, Iran became an Islamic Republic, and since then, they have not invaded anybody. And in that same interval of time, Israel's constantly, they've invaded Lebanon twice, Gaza three or four times, Syria, they bombed the power station in Iraq, and on and on and on and on and on. The United States, even worse. It's a huge list. I'm going to repost that article to the top of what really happened at the close of today's show. Please, read the article, make a copy of the URL, and everywhere you see a newspaper article trying to sell this idea that the Muslims are a threat to world peace if we don't go kill them, post the link to this article. Or just cut and paste the article and edit to suit your own taste and put it out there. You'll get back a lot of abuse and obscenity and profanity because they don't have another reply. History is against the warmongers on this. because the fraud has gone on too long. You can get away with it for a year or two saying, oh, yeah, they're bad. We got to go get them, the way Hitler did with the Polish people. But after all these years, from 1979 to the present day, Iran hasn't invaded anybody. Israel and the U.S. are constantly invading other countries. It's very obvious who the real threat to world peace is, and it's not the Islamic states. And it's not the Muslims. So, all righty, let's see. Okay, Dennis in Michigan. Aloha, Dennis. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael. I want to thank you for bringing up February 13th being this very infamous anniversary. I did not know that. Of the bombing of Dresden. For all of you artists out there, that was a place where they would, like a place of refuge for them to get away from the war, because generally artists, writers, etc., are not into killing. You know, they have common sense. And
well, in a lot of ways, Dresden was Germany's version of Paris. It was the center where all the artists were. And yeah, the reason it was such a shock, the reason it was done, the Germans thought Dresden would not be touched in the war because it was a cultural center and it was not part of the war machine.
Right.
And they just figured, okay, yeah, this is where we go when we don't want to deal with the war. And they went in and firebombed the place. And not just firebombed it, I mean, they did to such an intensity as to literally melt the entire city into a giant, you know, puddle of slag. They couldn't even go in and recover all the bodies. 500,000 people dead. And it was done to make the point of, yeah, we can and will do this to you anytime we feel like it. And it was considered an offense not just against Germany's people and their culture, but against the art culture of the entire world.
Well, as an artist like your wife, a musician who's two-thirds unemployed, you know, I mean, we do what we can. It's a very offensive remembrance of a day that I've read many recounts of that, and I'm about half German. I'm part Russian also and part Spanish, so this really touches me. And I thank you for the ability to express that. And for bringing that up, I did not know the anniversary of that.
Yeah,
that was an appalling event.
It was. So was Hiroshima and Nagasaki. They weren't really necessary. Japan was already trying to surrender, and ultimately the terms of final surrender were pretty much what Japan was offering to begin with, which was full capitulation with the exception of, you know, keeping their emperor. And it was done to send a message to the rest of the world. We've now got these nuclear weapons, and we have the political will to use them on civilians anywhere. And that's an important lesson. That's another thing that you need to keep in mind when you hear all this talk about the threat of weapons of mass destruction in the hands of Iraq, and they never had them, or in the hands of Iran, who don't have them, or any of these other countries. In all of the history of nuclear weapons, only one nation has ever actually used an atomic bomb against the civilians of another country. And that's the United States. None of these other countries we're being told that we have to be worried about have actually done it. The United States is the only nation to actually have that kind of psychotic government to drop atomic bombs on the civilians of another country. And, you know, all the claims after the fact about how, oh, it would have taken us so many millions of people to invade the Japanese mainland is just designed to justify it retroactively, but Japan was trying to surrender. Japan was beaten, and Japan knew it. They absolutely were beaten, and they were trying to surrender. The Japanese prince, I'm forgetting his name, was trying to get into see the Allies, and they simply said, shut the doors. We don't want to talk to them. If they surrender now, it's going to get in the way of sending a message to the Soviet Union. All righty, let's see. Moving right along here. The IMF, the global central bank that everybody loves to hate, is now calling for a dollar alternative, and they're talking about a possible replacement for the dollar as the world's reserve currency. Now, there are two implications of this. The first, obviously, is if the dollar is no longer the world's reserve currency, the dollar will plummet. It will implode. It will be all over for the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve. I think probably that's a good thing. But the second situation is the IMF is talking about issuing their own currency, a global version of the Federal Reserve note. Those pretty printed pieces of paper that aren't really worth anything other than what the issuing authority says they are. It's just ink and paper. It's legalized counterfeiting that they're going to print up and loan to the people of the world, and the people of the world are going to owe the full face value of that money plus accruing interest back to the private central bank. It's a global version of the Federal Reserve, and we see what kind of devastation this has done to the United States economy and every place else where private central banking has been allowed to take root, like the European Union. Those member countries are saying, we can't do this anymore, because the trap of a private central bank is that all the money in circulation represents a loan from that private central bank. And the instant that first private, that first pretty printed piece of paper goes into circulation, more money is owed to that private central bank than actually exists. And that's the trap. It doesn't matter how hard you work or how productive you are, you can never pay it off. Any new money that comes into circulation to pay the interest on the old money is the proceed of yet another loan. That's the trap. That's why Andrew Jackson wanted to get us away from the Federal Reserve. It's why Abraham Lincoln wanted to get away from the bankers. It's why John F. Kennedy tried to get us away from the Federal Reserve. It's legalized counterfeiting, and it is a debt trap that you can never, ever be free of. And the IMF is just a larger version of it. And that's why it must be opposed. You go to all these countries that are rebelling all around the world, and the media likes to say, oh, it's Arabs this, and, you know, Muslims and Middle East. It started in Iceland. You go to any of these locations, like Greece, during the rioting that we had in Greece last year, and you will see spray painted on all the walls, IMF go home, IMF get lost. The people of the world understand that a global fascist economic dictatorship is being brought into being that is designed to plunge the people of the world permanently into debt slavery from which they can never escape without revolution and violence. And they're figuring, let's do it now and get it over with, and not wait until they have all control of all the money and all the resources. So this IMF call for a dollar alternative, they're trying to bring a new global currency into existence that they will be master of, the global. They don't want to deal with the Federal Reserve anymore. The IMF wants to supersede the Federal Reserve and become the global reserve. And that's all it is. It's just playing the same dirty trick on a planetary scale. And you know it means starvation and privation for the people of the world. Because when you have a private central bank in a country and it gets into trouble, it can declare war on another country and loot their wealth and bring it in for the private central bank. And you've got all these private central banks warring with each other for compound interest. But when you have one bank and one planet and everybody's hopelessly in debt, there's no way for new money to come into being. And the abuses that will be leveled against the people in that circumstance are just unimaginable. Debts will be passed on to your grandchildren the way they are now here in the United States of America. Everyone will be born into poverty and slavery. Liberty and freedom as we have known it, constitutional democracies as we have known them, will be a thing of the past. Our children won't even know about it. The schools will never teach that there was another way to live your life, just as our schools today don't teach that this nation was founded without a private central bank on a whole other system that worked better for the people. In our schools today, children are propagandized to think the Federal Reserve is the way it's always been and the way it always must be, that there cannot be another way of running the nation's finances. Meanwhile, the Obama administration is now saying they want new rules that homeowners will have to come up with a 10% down payment for all U.S. homebuyers, which sounds really kind of good until you realize that what's going on is Wall Street has screwed the economy with the fraudulent mortgage-backed securities. The government let them do it. Help the banks confiscate your homes to cover the losses, and now Obama wants to look like he's trying to solve the problem by making homes harder to buy for those Americans who still have jobs. And they're worried whether or not Cairo is going to happen here. I think it's already overdue. The damage is already done, and what they're trying to do to make it look like they're fixing the problem is actually going to make life worse for ordinary, working, and middle-class Americans. Everything they do makes the situation worse. Over the last 10 years, every decision by the federal government has been 180 degrees out of phase with what would actually make life better for the American people. Makes it great for the people in Wall Street. Makes it great for the people in Washington, D.C. But they are oblivious to the suffering they're causing out here. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Broadcasting Network.
What really happened with your host, Mike Rivero? You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here is your host, Michael Rivero.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Caller off air is telling me that apparently the House is going to try and go back and extend some of those provisions of the Patriot Act. They're afraid of you. They are so afraid of you. They're trying to pass as many laws as they can. Constitution be darned. We're going to keep them uppity slaves in their pens. It is their role in society to slave their lives away so that we can pour money all over Wall Street and all over Israel and all over the war machine. Because we can't let our buddies, the bankers, go to jail for all that fraudulent mortgage-backed security stuff. Because they're great campaign donors. So that's 6:30 tonight, and I'm going to bet a whole plug nickel right now that they'll probably get it this time. They'll probably get it this time, because Egypt has sent shockwaves of fear through the tyrannical governments of the world, and now even the pretense of will of the people and democracy is going to be abandoned in the rush to slam the gates on the cages as hard as they can. That's why you have Josh Bolton out there just openly saying democracy in the Mideast is a bad idea, while you have John McCain out there saying that the democratic movement in the Middle East is a virus. You're all diseased for wanting to be free. That's the mindset that we have out there. All righty, let's see. Congress is apparently moving to block the state's ability to declare bankruptcy. As you know, the states are broke. Their tax revenues are way, way down. Their expenditures are way, way up, including all of these unfunded mandates from the federal government for things like global warming. And it's put them between a rock and a hard place. So now the Congress is saying that they're not going to allow states to declare bankruptcy, because if they did, it would upset the municipal bond market. In other words, we're going to let the states go down into complete ruin because we don't want Wall Street to lose another one of the little markets that they make money on. This move to block states' bankruptcies is not about the states, it's not about the citizens, it's about the investors. We've got to protect them, no matter what it costs the people. And so inevitably, we are in a phase of American history where the solution to all of the fiscal problems is raise taxes and don't spend any of it on the people. Because by golly, we got to keep the Wall Street bankers out of jail, and we got to keep buying F-35 warplanes for Israel, and we got to go out there and we got to keep on, you know, spending money to put dictators in power over countries that really otherwise would not like us very much, as they're getting ready to try and do once again in Iran. So our government's entire mindset, remember what Damon Slivers was saying during the hearings about the financial fraud? He said we can have a reasonable discussion about foreclosures, or we can preserve the capital structure of the banks. We cannot do both. Which should we do? And we have our answer. The U.S. government is on the side of the bankers against the American people. Now, over in Iceland, where this global revolution has started, they have over 100 of their former bank leaders are under investigation. They're going to start throwing these people in jail. That's what we should be doing in this country, firing the government and throwing the bankers who crashed the economy into prison. Instead, our government is saying, oh, no, 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 we'll just go on and take more money from the people. Take a few million homes. They got plenty to spare. We'll be back tomorrow at 2 o'clock in the afternoon here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Until then, stay safe, stay well. Aloha, America.